Morning, everyone. Thanks for coming in. Thanks for coming to our session. It's a competitive world, so we're really pleased we've almost got a full... Well, I think we have got a full house, so that's brilliant. So we're here to talk about the City of London. So I'm David Ainsworth. I'm from CORE, but also here as the Vice President of the City Property Association, so I'm chairing this session. We've got a great panel. I'll introduce them as we go through. But we're here to really talk about the city, the future of the city. We'll start the themes to deal with potential diversification of occupiers. The city is facing various challenges, some of which we heard about at the beginning of today, but in particular, the types of occupiers and the types of buildings we need to provide for them. So we're trying to deal with the combinations of millennials and multinationals, maybe some fading financials, but also fintech, the disruptors, but also the dinosaurs. So that's enough alliteration. So what I'll do is I'll ask a question of each of our panel, and then we'll open it up and try and keep it as free-flowing as possible. So firstly, Alastair Moss. So Alastair's the Chairman of the Property Investment Board of the City and Deputy Chair of the Planning Committee. So you've got a series of roles, and very active. And Alastair and I have done a number of seminars, in particular recently with the CPA and the City did a research project called TechX the City, which was about tech in the wider city. But it's really showing how we're working closely together to promote that side of the world. So Alastair, perhaps you could just talk about how the city is responding to changing demand, particularly around maybe public realm and transport, to encourage this mix of occupiers.
Well, thank you, David, and good morning. I suppose I should start off by really kind of saying, enunciating what the city is kind of standing for, and its kind of key messages are in these changing times, that its key message is it's trying to benefit society, but it's, as part of that, trying to shape a future city and also securing economic growth. And that's important, we believe, for the U.K. as a whole. It is providing 2.2 million jobs to the U.K. and over 72 billion in taxes alone. And the city is always reinventing itself, and I think we're at a very exciting time in terms of the reinvention of the square mile. It was the city, I think, the first kind of co-working place in the world with a coffee house culture, and it is providing now, I think, a very attractive base for innovation and influence and creativity, and that is shown by the kind of occupiers that are there now. Everyone will know about Bloomberg, Salesforce, FT relocating, et cetera, and those more startup companies like Deliveroo and others. It is definitely hitting the right spots, but we're by no means complacent in this. And it's my view and the corporation's view that it's all about responding to demand. Where is the world economy going so that we can retain our preeminence as the world's financial and trade center? And that demand is really led by where people want to work, because if we're honest about this, it's all about attracting world-class talent. So how is the city evolving and keeping up with this? And as David's said there, this is a lot about public realm and about transportation. I think the city is being bold and initiative in this respect, and when one looks back to the 1980s and things when the city was dominated by finance, if you look at the workforce now, almost 10% of the workforce now is related to the tech sectors. 98% or so of the city's businesses are SMEs, and around 70% or 80% of city businesses are working with other city businesses in terms of co-working and things. And collaboration, of course, is a kind of key part of that. So in terms of attracting the businesses who in turn need to attract the talent, I think that is all about playing on our culture and increasing our cultural offer. And people will probably be aware of the fact that we are actively promoting a new concert hall, a world-class concert hall for London, and the relocation of the Museum of London. It is about playing on our heritage, you know, the city's 1,000 or so year history, or 2,000-year history. It is about increasing our environmental offer, and particularly things like air quality. It is about making the city a more trendy place to be in terms of its food and beverage offer and its hotel offer. It's about improving public space. The Bank Junction, I'm sure, will come up today. We're very proud of that scheme. It's not a public realm scheme, but it's saying something about the city being bold and innovative. And other schemes that we've promoted, like Cheapside and Aldgate and things, are in that fold. It is about connectivity. It has long been the case that the city, and I think central London as a whole, due to government policy principally, has not been anywhere near as connected as it should be. And we are actively promoting a 5G publicly accessible Wi-Fi network there. And it's also about generally making the city more attractive to these people. So I think in summary, I mean, we are obsessed about making the city and retaining the city's preeminence. It is about increasing that offer, and a lot of it is about public transport. It is about public open spaces, and we will be pursuing that with vigour in the years to come. We'd be very interested to hear your views on how we can increase that offer.
Thanks, Alistair. So Vicky Fowler, who's a partner at Gowlings. You've worked in the city for many years. So what do you think the city could do more, or do you, from an occupier's point of view, do you have a perspective on that?
No, absolutely. I mean, really, I'd echo very much what Alistair has said in terms of my background is planning. And for me, it is about creating that right external environment as well as the internal environment. And, you know, effectively, it is that creating that live, work and play environment. So key for all employers is increasing productivity, grabbing market share, which we all do through collaboration. And it's about creating those places for collaboration, both internally and externally. And also occupiers are facing a war on talent, with employee wellbeing becoming central to recruitment and retention. I think it's also very much about destinations. I mean, I've been in the city for 18 years of my career, and whenever talks about office relocations came up, it was always, you know, effectively I spent my career, a large part of my career, on the corner of London Bridge, and that was very much a destination in its own right. I think there is certainly more that we can do. I mean, I think the importance of Realm is being recognised in design and development in terms of new schemes that are coming forward. There's growing awareness that office buildings can play an important role in creating destinations. So we're seeing more ground floors being opened up, upper floors, sky gardens, etc., being created. But there are difficulties in terms of security and those concerns. So therefore, I feel that the city do need to lead that initiative, as there can be conflict between enlightened developers that want to develop that public realm and obviously occupiers who do not. I think the other thing with the new towers, we're seeing 106 obligations, you know, creating those more through routes, public spaces, better wayfinding. I think wayfinding in the city is critical. And also the whole delivery and servicing consolidation centres, and obviously reducing traffic congestion around the city is critical to placemaking. I think more can be done, particularly in terms of around the river, how we use the river, how we use the open spaces. Predominant use along Riverside is the commercial offices interspersed with other uses. But I think, you know, the character of that Riverside does need to change, and I think it's been recognised through the city plan. So, you know, greater concentration of uses that add vibrancy to that area, such as retail and leisure uses, as we've seen happen in South Bank. You know, very much to be driven by that increased accessibility. We've had the staircase down from London Bridge, and the Thames Tideway Tunnel will create a new public space towards Blackfriars Pier. And just how we use our open spaces. So again, better use promoted as venues, creating public realm that's less congested during peak periods, you know, and really utilising those areas and really creating that 24/7 economy and that live, work, play environment. I think the city's proposals for the Culture Hub are positive, as Alistair's touched on. And you know, it's estimated to create an additional 2 million visitors each year. But again, that's increasing the demand for hotels, shops and restaurants. So again, that emphasis on mixed use. I think it also highlights the need for a coordinated approach by the city, particularly on the fringes. So we're seeing Crossrail stations opening by 2019 on those fringes. And it's very much how those adjoining boroughs can contribute to the facilities the city requires. Again, really to support that live, work and play environment.
Thanks very much. So, Gerald, let's talk about buildings. Gerald, you've got quite a few buildings. I've just been looking at them all. And you've got you've got your foot in lots of camps, so you're pretty cool. But you've also got quite traditional buildings. So it's an interesting range, and I think you've got a great perspective. So what about the buildings at the moment?
Yeah, that's really interesting. Thank you, David. Good morning, everyone. I was at a letting meeting this morning for one of our buildings in the city, and there are two tech companies that are on the list, and one of them was due to view now, 11 o'clock today, and the agent had called our agent last night and said, no, the viewing's cancelled. Senior management have made a decision. They don't want to be anywhere near the city. And the other one we were talking about was there's a marked reluctance to go to a corporate building in the city. So I think the city is getting there because, as Alistair alluded to, the new Bloomberg headquarters, that is a 1 million square foot tech building right in the heart of the city. We've got Deliveroo, and if I'd said to you 5 years ago sitting here that a food delivery company that ride around on bicycles are going to be occupying the old trading floor above the back of Cannon Street Station, you would have thought I was even madder than the people on the bicycles. So it is getting there. Now, just moving on from there, try and experiment. Get out of the tube. You can't drive to Bank anymore. Get out of the tube at Bank and walk up. You got Prince's Street, then you got Moorgate, then you get to Finsbury Square, and then you get up towards City Road, and then you're at Old Street Roundabout. And try that at 6:30 this evening, and you tell me on that route where you would prefer to be. Where is the life? Where's the dynamism? And it's certainly not in Prince's Street, and it doesn't really begin until you get just north of Finsbury Square. So the city, as I said, is getting there, but it needs to have more sort of ground floor animation. It's got it in some areas, but if you compare it, as I say, to that sort of Old Street area, it's not quite there. When we did, we refurbished 200 Aldersgate, 2011, we finished it. And I think if the agents had written down a list of the potential tenants for the building, I expect very few of the tenants that actually came to the building would have been on that list. And this was just, I think, the beginning of companies moving from the west to the east, and also thinking of the city as a location. These were Citizens Advice Bureau took a floor. We got an advertising company. We got the rail regulator. And those sort of organisations wouldn't have gone near the city 5 years before. And we did vary the location. So depending on the occupier, if they were sort of city, well, we were firmly in the city. We were 5 minutes from Bank. And if they were sort of the more creative occupiers, we were South Clerkenwell or East Holborn or, you know, whatever it was to sort of chime with them. Anyway, we got the building very well let, so that was interesting. I think I'd just sort of go back to that west to east migration, because when I first started work, if you drew a sort of a lozenge around the centre of the centre of London, the city would be on the east, and then you'd be West End and Knightsbridge on the other side. And with the massive amount of money that's been expended in E14 Canary Wharf, and then after that in E20 Stratford, and all of the development that's happened to the east of the city, I think that lozenge would now go sort of Knightsbridge, whatever, and it would go all the way down to Canary Wharf, Stratford, which actually puts the city right in the middle of London. And that, I think we're seeing that with the way that the tenants are changing, and the general sort of improvement in the area. So I think to sum up, it's getting there, but a bit more needs to be done to improve the infrastructure, particularly at sort of street level, animate that a bit more. Thank you, David.
Thanks. Just on Princes Street, I don't know if anyone realises, but the entrance to the NED is on Princes Street, the other entrance, I should say. And if you haven't been in there, it is an amazing new, well, it's obviously a hotel, but there's six restaurants, but it is incredible value. And it's certainly, strangely, it's a very small entrance, which is sort of gets to what you're saying.
If that was all tonight,
right,
so
okay,
I'll
good.
Check it out.
But it is, so the Princes Street bit is actually sorting itself out. Unfortunately, the Bank of England's the entire length of the street the other side, so you can't do much about that, really.
Well, you need to animate that wall along the side of the Bank of England.
The Bank of England, yes.
There's
so I think a massive graffiti.
I think that wall was put up to defend the Bank of England.
You get Banksy to put a...
I think a giant... Yeah, that would be good. We'll do that. Right. James. So James Gelton, AXA. So I think it's a good opportunity for James to talk. We're watching the 22 Bishopsgate, the scheme which has sort of stopped and really got going again after Brexit, and it's fantastic to see it coming up. It's level 25 now on the core, so it's getting exciting. It's poking, just getting above everything else. And so James is in charge of leasing, and I know you've got some interesting stuff there. So do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, look, there's lots and lots has already been said, and I'm going to try and not to repeat all of that. I last worked in the city actually in 1989. You were putting up buildings then, Gerald. I moved away and worked in Docklands, West End, other locations, and came back a year ago. And the change in the culture of the city is just astonishing, and people don't really believe it. Walk out the back of our building to Broadgate Square into Spitalfields on a busy Thursday night, and it's just electric. The party that Gerald was referring to is at the NED. We're actually doing a launch of what is now 22, as opposed to 22 Bishopsgate. And we felt it was just the obvious place to do it because the NED is so representative of the big and exciting cultural changes that are going on in the city at the moment. But, David, just to get back to your question, we had a big decision to make last October. We had already done a lot of work in the ground, but we had to come to sign the main building contract for well over a million square foot. And we wanted to make sure we were going to make the right decision. So we did all the research and all the charts. But actually, it came down to three kind of big propositions. The first is that we and our investors are in it for the long term, and this is a strategic play on London. Getting more to the point of the city, the second is London's axis is moving to the east, Gerald's lozenge, and there is absolutely no doubt about that. We're big believers in it, and we think there's, a very good value proposition. You just look at all the infrastructure that's going on and actually the growth and where people are living now out east, and you just can't deny it. And the other thing is, we're building something of significant scale, and that allows us to do things to respond to the emerging workplace agenda. And it's just worth touching on that for a moment, because if we go back to 2010 at the back end of the global financial crisis, corporates woke up and saw this massive overhang of real estate, and there's just nothing they could do with it. And real estate shot straight into the boardroom. And that is why now, when you look at corporates and how they're dealing with their real estate, firstly, they're trying to take less space and use it more effectively. So why do we need to provide these facilities if third parties can do it? Secondly, they're looking to work in more kind of open business networks. So why have an in-house marketing department or an in-house research team when you can work with external companies who are much more innovative and mobile? The talent thing, everyone uses the word talent, but it is so real. It is still the highest thing on the corporate agenda with AI and how that's going to affect things coming up behind. And the other thing is how workspace projects on people's brand. And there's this statistic about, office workers, 45% of their satisfaction all being to do with the location they work in and their travel to work patterns. So in terms of our proposition, within this building, about 10% of it, over 100,000 square foot, is put across to what we're calling community uses. So that starts at the ground floor. The reception area will be more of an art gallery that's curated, so it's a very different experience. It's not all about marble, it's about art and changing art, and we've been working with the White Cube Gallery to kind of curate that. We've got a food hall. It's not called a food hall, I think we're branding it the market, which will be on the second floor, and that's kind of like pop-up stalls, so everyone in the building can go down and use it, and it's a place to kind of collaborate and meet and socialise. We've then got an incubator, which Alistair and his team sort of encouraged us to do, but for us it was a win-win situation. So on the seventh floor, we have to provide 50 desks for SMEs, which is a great thing, actually subsidised desks for SMEs. But along with that, we're going to be putting other kind of high-tech facilities in, which corporates might not otherwise want to put in themselves. Gymnasium, there's a retreat, mental you know, mental well-being going up the agenda again very, very quickly. It's just as important as physical well-being. And right at the top, we've got this club, which is, if you like, democratizing the top of the building. So everyone in the building can go up there and use it in event space and meeting rooms and you know, and what have you. You asked about the challenges. I prefer to think of them more as opportunities. You know, clearly, the challenge is when you've got a mixed-use building, you've got to get all your logistics right and all your operational things right. We're working with a great team at the moment to get all that, and that's all designed into the base build. I think the biggest thing, David, is this cultural shift in how we manage buildings. It's not just about providing space and providing facilities. It's about providing experience, and there's an awful lot you can learn from the new wave of kind of serviced office providers. They have to do the service well, because if they don't, all their customers can just walk. So it's that cultural shift to provide that experience as events. It's about getting the art right. It's about making all those community areas work. And it's about creating an environment which is just, you know, a social and business network that people want to be in.
Yeah, and it's and I think that's also a challenge for management and the whole principle of management of buildings, which I think is needs to catch up with that in many cases. So, Kayla, Atlantic, I'm on message. Kayla, from your point of view, do you put a city in a different box in the portfolio in terms of the way you approach the buildings? How do you see the city?
I mean, first of all, I think if we look at our portfolio at the moment in the city and the customers that house most of our buildings, they are very traditional city, historically traditional city occupiers, and financial services, professional services, and insurance. And, you know, I think that what's unique about the city and who occupies our city buildings outside of Central London and other Central London buildings would be the big professional services and the insurance companies. But when I look at the future of customers and occupiers in the city, and we just look at our existing customers and the traditional customers that or businesses that want to be in the city, you know, they're going through a lot of change, and they will continue to go through change. So by virtue of the disruption within each of their sectors, they will have to change their businesses, and they will look different. So if we look at financial services, we know it's being disrupted through technology, blockchain, having to compete for digital talent, trying to attract millennials to their sector, regulation, et cetera. You know, we know that in New York, Goldman Sachs went from 600 cash equity traders in 2000, they now have 2. And they've replaced those people with digital scientists or engineers. They've hired 300, different to 600, so there's a net reduction, but they're hiring a different type of person. So the workforce is changing. If you look at insurance, it will be disrupted as well. And one of our customers in 20 Fenchurch Street, Markel, are actually intending to grow a different part of their business called Markel Ventures, which is a big growth area for them in the U.S., and they'll grow that here. And they're looking at how they diversify the way they invest and make returns in their business. And then professional services, you know, they're very susceptible, particularly the accounting firms, susceptible to automation and change within their businesses. There's a 90% probability that in 15 to 20 years, auditors will be replaced by automation. So their business is thinking differently about the future. You know, we know that Deloitte, their biggest growth industry or business line within their company is digital consulting. And the people that they hire into their digital consulting business have different needs and or say requirements and drivers for where they want to work. And those drivers are very different to those at the New Street Square campus. So we look at the city as, you know, really how we're going to adapt the needs of our customers and create the property that they need. You know, there's a lot of talk about AI and automation and people getting nervous about jobs being replaced in the city and around financial services. But when, you know, when we talk to the banks and the big banks who are absolutely committed to the City of London, you know, they've got similar challenges in terms of how they're looking at their workforce. But, you know, they're looking to hire people that are innovative. You know, the skills that are different now are who can provide innovation, creativity, who can solve problems for them, have empathy. And if you think about the types of people that get hired into those roles or those types of skill sets, they're creative people. So, you know, their needs are really changing in what they need to provide for their future workforce. You know, the work that we've done with, you know, Deutsche Bank are a great customer of ours in Victoria with their wealth and asset management business. And, you know, their needs in the city are very, very important around public realm, culture. They're very much wanting to engage with the city and with us around what the ground floor and the public spaces look like and how they can accommodate their people, their people's needs in terms of work-life balance. And, you know, so I think for us, when we're looking forward to customers in the city in the future, I don't think we need to deviate wholly outside of those traditional sectors, but really look at how we can help those businesses adapt to change, provide experiences, not just public realm to look at, but what are those experiences in the public realm and the environments that allow them to bring the right type of people into their businesses.
That's great. That's great. It's more than the physical space. It's getting into people's heads. So that's everyone has had a say. Should we just open this up? I thought we might take a few questions together, and then we'll mix it up a bit. So I can't see because the lights are on. There's one here. Any others? Put your hands up at the same time. So if we'll take a couple.
Thank you. My name's Tim McCower from McCower Architects. I have a question whether any of you have opinions or experiences of residential in the city, either in amongst commercial uses or on top of. What's your view? It obviously does relate to the life of a place and the pulse of a city.
Yep, okay. Should we take that one as well?
Hi, James Adam from Beaumont. Just touching on using Princess Street as the example is a good one for Alistair. One of the problems we see a lot with our buildings in the city is people are just overflowing off the footpaths onto the roads, especially at peak times. And how much thought or whatever is just a very simple thing of widening pavements where they possibly can. Because at the moment it just seems, and it's going to get even more of a problem when Crossrail starts to come through and we've got all the extra people. We were touching on that in the West End one earlier. So how much thought is being given to actually increasing the width of pavements to allow people to move from the north to south or east-west a little bit easier?
Okay, thanks. Well, what we'll do is maybe Alistair, if you answer that, and maybe Gerald, with wearing your Bart Square hat, you could talk a little bit about the resi side.
So in terms of, you're quite right, I think there is a perception that the pavements in the city are full. I mean, it's a good problem to have because the workforce in the city is increasing. The corporation is very aware of this. So with all the new major developments, there's basically comfort modelling that is being undertaken. It's not just in terms of the street space, it's the wind modelling and everything, the whole experience of these buildings. But it goes to the point about how important the public space is. And as already been mentioned, a lot of the new major buildings are actually releasing more public spaces and new public squares. They're quasi-public-private places. But that is part of part of the equation there. Around Farringdon and things, we face the prospect of that being, this has again been alluded to, that being basically the centre of London. I can't remember the statistics. It's going to be something like 200 or so train movements an hour there or something outrageous. You know, and that number of people means we've got to be more radical about the street space. It does mean removal of more vehicular traffic, and freight consolidation is one part of that. I think we'll see more pedestrianisation, and schemes like Aldgate and Cheapside have seen the increase of the space to actually walk down the pavement. I mean, those of you in the room will know about how these metrics are measured, and it's something that we are onto. I think there's a lot more to do. It's recognised as a problem, but we need to do more with it.
I mean, I think it's also worth saying that Bank is obviously in phase one, so the closure of the traffic. Is really the experimental period, just to make sure everything works. But then the pavements will be moved and widened as sort of part of phase two. That's what we're hoping over the next, let's say, 18 months. So Gerald, on the other question.
Yes, on the residential. I think in the early 1990s, the city, when there wasn't a huge amount of demand for office space, the city let residential into different old buildings scattered around the city, which then came back to haunt them 15, 20 years later, because there were daylighting issues when somebody wanted to put a big development next door to them. And also the city, just talking about the pavements being crowded, a lot of the servicing in the city is done at night, which is obviously contrary to having people wanting to sleep and so on. We found this fantastic pocket in the heart of the city at old Barts Hospital land, where we've created, or we are creating, Barts Square, which is 236 residential units. And it's a great place to put it, because it's sort of, in a way, quite self-contained. And you've got St Paul's Heights coming across part of it, so you're never going to put a tower up near it. And that's gone very well, and we finish it later this year, and we're getting on for 85% sold already for the first phase. And obviously that whole area around Barts Smithfield will be hugely enhanced when the Elizabeth line opens in the next couple of years.
Yes, and I think one of the unique elements of the city, clearly it's an employment centre. It's all about employment, it's all about offices and the other uses that go around that. And I think, Alistair, I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
Thank you. I'll just say briefly, though, the intelligence we're picking up is that this kind of talent fight that's going on, people are expecting to live very close to where they work now. And we know there's a housing crisis, but in terms of proximity, there are some hubs now where they're offering to live and work almost in the same place. So one thing we're kind of looking at is whether there is a possibility of housing in certain areas on shorter tenures. That said, though, as Gerald quite rightly says, there is no kind of second-class rule for residential occupiers in their public rights, so to speak, on light licensing, etc., which could then scupper some of these entertainment or business uses. So it's a very difficult balance, but what I would say is that I think we have to have our eyes open to the fact that there is that need, there is an increasing demand for some people expecting to live closer than they are currently.
Okay, sorry.
Going beyond that, it's not just about whether there's the demand. You know, we've all talked about creating a more active ground floor environment and something that's more kind of eclectic in the city. You can't deny that, you know, more residential will help that nighttime economy. And I completely agree, it's where you put those people so you don't scupper future commercial growth.
Yeah, and the city is a square mile but it's very fuzzy boundaries. So, of course, the Tower Hamlets in particular on the other side, you can walk into the city there's a lot of residential there. So we shouldn't get too isolated in the way we look at this. Okay, any other questions, please? Thank you, Charles. Very loyal. I'd like another one at the same time. If somebody puts their hands up, please.
Okay, so Charles Begley, Executive Director at City Property Association. And I'm wanting to do a little bit of a blatant plug, and David rope you in as vice president and obviously fellow board member Kayla and others to actually get behind it. Alistair touched on the corporation seeking to make the area seem a bit trendy, use his words. Gerald, very frank about the leasing issues in terms of a tech company, but they clearly don't feel it's cool enough. But there's lots going on. We've heard that the Ned's there. Great work over at Broadgate. There are pockets, if you can find, you know, you need to find them. And I think, you know, we've been working as a CPA and the City of London Corporation have been working for addressing those perception issues and have created a digital platform called One City, which we're just about to roll out. And Alistair, you know, for the corporation, next month, fingers crossed, will agree at committee to contribute a significant sum to really get that off the ground. And I know James and Kayla are already on board at the begging bowls with you next, Gerald. But really, in terms of these perception, how much is reality, how much is perception, how much do we need to drive that, and what do we need to do as, you know, industry professionals to alter that?
Okay, and I'll just take the question behind as well, sorry.
So a little opener questioner, but Patrick Osborne from DRMM. Identity. Every city has an identity. New York, the gridded city. Singapore, the garden city. Rome, arguably the heritage city. In 2050, say, what do you as the panel see London as? What's the identity of London in 2050?
Yeah, that's a good one for everybody, actually. And they're both the same sort of thing. So, Gerald, you start.
The world city. London has got, think about it, London is the seat of government. It's the head of financial. You could say it's the world financial capital. It's got a huge, we've been talking about it, tech, creative industry. And it's also got a burgeoning life sciences business coming on. You go to the United States, Washington government, New York financial, West Coast tech, Houston Life Sciences. In London, it's all in one place. And we're in the right time zone, and we've got a great city.
I very much endorse that. And I think also the city's smart city agenda. And as you say, I think it's very much, in terms of the actual city and the square mile, it's being a place for everybody. And being at the heart of whether it be smart cities, tech, etc. So,
Kayla.
Well, Gerald took the words out of my mouth. And being Canadian, I think London is phenomenal in that you have everything in one city. So whether it's music, art, culture, right through to, you know, a real global center for all kinds of businesses. And I think that's, you know, we mustn't underestimate how unique that is. And so, I mean, you've said everything I would say.
Are you talking about the city or are you talking about London? Because you can't deny that whole world thing. I just prefer the term global. I don't know why, because it kind of conjures up more, well, it's different. But it conjures up more diversity, and I think diversity is one of London's absolute greatest assets, and I hope that's something that's protected and encouraged, you know, all the way through. If we're talking about the city, I mean, there's no doubt, and I know the CPA have done a lot of work on this, and I know you've recruited some PR people to help brand this, but, you know, the perception is the city is financial, and it is an awful lot more, so you've got to keep addressing that. So it's getting that diversity thing across. And I think also just promoting its culture, you know, it has got a lot of culture. I mean, I'd be a great fan of the new, you know, the new concert hall, if we can do that. You know, people think about the Barbican. You know, the Barbican is not as highbrow as people think it is. You know, you go there in the evening and it's a real mix. I think it's a fantastic place. But I think a more diverse cultural offer in the city would be a very good thing.
Alistair?
Well, I suppose I'd like to say the city can't really be defined, because if you look at its history, it's, believe it or not, we're sitting in this room mainly wearing suits, etc., but it is the seat of creativity and adaption and change. I mean, we've got to be careful not to be too arrogant about that or complacent about it, but, you know, I think there's a 2,000-year history there of managing to be ahead of the game, and therefore that doesn't really suit compartmentalization or identity through the space or whatever.
So I think that's some great definitions there. So I think, Gerald, you should use your legendary powers of persuasion to go back to this pesky tech company and just tell them to come. I know, yeah, I was going to say. So, and we'll help you. We'll all get together and we'll give you a little quote and we'll just, it'll help you. So I think we're running out of time. So I'd just like to thank the panel. It's a challenging time. And thank you all for coming, and I hope you've learned something. Thanks a lot.